Start spreading the news.
Dale.
The Yankee lose.
No.
The Yankee lose.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Power, hey, let's do it again. The Yankee lose.
Yeah,
the Yankees lose.
Yankee lose. Let's go, baby.
David Ortiz and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. were having some fun at the expense of the New York Yankees, as was the entire Toronto Blue Jays clubhouse last night, as they are into the American League Championship Series for the first time since 2016. The Jays have won a playoff series for the first time since 2016. And, okay, yeah, Justin Blackwell, Locker and I were wrong. We were wrong, okay? We thought there'd be a game five. I was pleasantly surprised at the work of that bullpen.
I'm absolutely loving it. Good for the Jays.
We'll have Mike Wilner coming up with the more on the Blue Jays and how things look ahead of either the Tigers or the Mariners coming to Toronto for games one and two this weekend. Each and every day, we begin the Green Zone with the starting lineup, the top sports stories, and yeah, 5-2 Jays using eight pitchers to get the job done over the New York Yankees in game number four.
Every single one of you, bullpen game, Nathan Lucas, Miles Straw, all you takes everybody every day, start spreading the news.
And they are going to the American League Championship Series again, games one and two, Sunday and Monday. So there's your Thanksgiving plans with the family sitting around the TV.
Yeah, no kidding.
Stuffing turkey and Blue Jays baseball.
You know what's massive about this is they've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday to rest, right?
Oh, yeah.
Seattle and Detroit have to play another game tomorrow night, and then they got to get to Toronto for the first game in the ALCS, right? This is a massive event. For how this Jays team is set up, Jamie, this is huge. Winning in New York with the shortage of starters that they have, Bo Bichette might be back. Like, this really sets them up well for a trip to the World Series.
Probably going to see Chris Bassitt on that championship series roster as well, you'd think. As the fourth starter, so no bullpen games necessary against the Tigers or the Mariners.
And speaking of that series, the Tigers forcing a game five.
Breaking ball lifted to right. Riley Green has finally come alive. Tigers lead.
So the Tigers get past the Mariners. The Jays will play the winner of that series, of course. The Tigers will start Skubla. Skubal to the mound, and no word yet from the Mariners as to who's going to be up there. Phillies extended their series with an 8-2 win over the Dodgers, and the Cubs also avoiding a sweep with a 4-3 win hanging in there over the Brewers.
4:08 first pitch today for the Phillies-Dodgers game 4, 7:08 first pitch Brewers and the Cubs, as the Cubbies and Phillies will try to force a game 5 there. Let's get to the National Hockey League last night. Oh, man, I was hanging out, we're watching baseball. It was 3-0 for the Edmonton Oilers.
Zary launches one toward the Oilers. Next, Skinner misplayed it and had it poked in by Blake Coleman. This game is tied.
And then Nazem Kadri won in the 8th round of a really poor shootout. It looked like everybody was in preseason form in that shootout last night. But Kadri got the winner, 4-3 Flames in a shootout. Draisaitl did score his 400th goal of his career in that one. Dustin Wolfe absolutely was spectacular after that 3-0 lead by the Edmonton Oilers. Of course, the Flames back at it tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. The Oilers will welcome the Canucks on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday.
What are you doing, Skinner? What are you doing? Make one of you take the puck. You or Bouchard. Somebody take the puck. Standing there staring at it? We'll stick with the NHL. Leafs get the win, though their fans were more excited about the Jays game.
It's a funny hop off the end boards. And a
think we're in gold Blue Jays go mode.
Why not, man? What an exciting time around town.
So that was in the middle of the and then at the end of the game, because the Jays weren't done yet, a bunch of fans stuck around and watched the game on the
big screen.
Well,
they booed them when they turned the game off the big screen. They were like, boo! And they're like, okay, fine. Here's the game. You can hang
out. Fantastic, fantastic. So Habs 2, the Leafs 5. You know what? I watched a bit of that game. The Leafs look pretty good. I think fans should be very happy with that start. Matthew gets on the score sheet as well. An interesting stat. Him and Ovechkin both have 13 goals in season openers, and they're one behind the lead, which is Goulet and Cicerelli. So at 14, which I thought is kind of cool.
No, Matthews is probably going to break that record. He's already at 13. He's got many years left.
Well, I think there was a game, too. Didn't he kick off a season opener with, like, 4 goals or something?
That was his first ever game in his NHL career is when he scored those 4 goals.
That's right.
Against the Ottawa Senators for Austin Matthews with the Leafs.
14 games tonight in the NHL, including the Canucks, Jets, Senators, all getting their seasons going.
And meanwhile, the Rough Riders put their depth chart out there, and Brett Lawther will be the kicker for the Riders. For now,
you know, I don't even know if I'd be going this week if it wasn't that important. So that's the main thing, is just trying to go out, get the win this week. We'll figure it out after that. We're just concentrating on going 1-0, but this is obviously a pretty big game for us.
Yes, Brett Lawther is back on the roster. He says he's been dealing with a little bit of back tightness. A couple of weeks ago when they lost to the Montreal Alouettes, he started to feel something, couldn't shake it off in the bye week. So he kind of let it be known that maybe if this was a meaningless game, he wouldn't be kicking, but he'll be their guy tomorrow to try to clinch this thing. Mario Alford back on the roster. Sean Bain Jr. comes off. Joe Robustelli is on for the injured Dante Myers. It's a minor ankle injury there. And, of course, with that knee and foot injury, Roland Milligan Jr. is off this week. So Sheldrick Redwine will start at his halfback spot. Benny Sapp the third still starting at corner. A reminder, tomorrow night, Mosaic Stadium, 7 o'clock is the kickoff. Weather looks pretty darn good for a game in the middle of October. A pregame show here in the Green Zone will be at 5 o'clock tomorrow with Daryl Davis and Belton Johnson. As the Riders, this is what it means. They win and they clinch first in the division. If they lose, they can also clinch this weekend if the Calgary Stampeders lose.
Blitz?
Yes, the Blitz podcast is...
Ladies and gentlemen, the Blitz podcast is out there. Canada's fastest growing CFL podcast. Get it where you get your fine podcasts.
We recorded it late last night, and I've had a...
Don't watch it on YouTube.
Massive brain fart. Massive brain fart. I was wearing a blue shirt. I was wearing a blue shirt during the podcast ahead of the Argo game, and I'm like, wait a second. This was unintentional. I did not mean to wear this baby blue shirt that looks like the Argo jerseys. And then I totally named a player who hadn't played in the Riders for 2 years and said they might come back. And Britton was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, why are we recording this so late at night? Can I go to bed yet? But anyways, yeah, it's enthralling. And we didn't have to explain the designated nationalized American rule because Britton explained it last week, even though they are using that rule for the ratio this week. Yay for the Riders and the
What would they have done if they would have thrown the American kicker in? Oh, that would have been a gong show.
We don't need to get into that yet because that might be something they deal with next week. Coming up next here on the Green Zone, the Blue Jays are off to the American League Championship Series, where we've been asking this question. And it's been interesting, the responses just around the building. Who is the MVP of the American League Divisional Series for the Toronto Blue Jays? Who is it? There are more than a few nominees.
Right now, if you had to pick an MVP for the Jays.
And I will say, if you want to vote for the manager, John Schneider, you're allowed to do it. Because he might be my MVP. After the way he managed everything in that series.
Oh, here comes the Schneider text.
1-877-332-8255. What do you think the MVP should be for the American League Divisional Series? This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
You better believe I'm back in the New York blue. I'm back in the New York blue.
Every single one of you, bullpen game, Nathan Lucas, Miles Straw, all you... Takes everybody every day. Start spreading the news.
Yeah, the New York Yankees, they're out. The Toronto Blue Jays are moving on to the American League Championship Series. We're asking you on who should be the MVP.
First game Sunday.
Yeah, game one Sunday for the American League Championship Series. Asking you who should be the MVP of the American League Divisional Series. And I'm nominating the manager. After all the heat he's been taking over the last couple of years, John Schneider, I thought he did a masterful job. But Greg texting in, Schneider should get the MVP for the biggest sewer mouth manager of the year. Times have sure changed when we now praise a baseball manager for spewing out F-bomb after F-bomb for all the kids to hear. Schneider needs to set a good example for the kids, not act like a deranged, foul-mouthed lunatic.
Just some context before you jump in here. We hear from Greg quite often. He does not like Schneider.
Okay, but I've heard this. Please think of the children with the Sportsnet cameras and the Hazel May thing. And they're cussing on television. I'm sorry. You are going into a room with grown men who just accomplished getting to the Final Four. The last thing they should be is the chill. Think of the children. They want to celebrate. You're going into their area with your cameras live on television. And yeah, you might hear an F-bomb. And I think kids should be able to handle it. And parents should be able to, they're using adult words, even though some adults probably use adult words around your kids anyways. John Schneider, in that moment, is trying to rev up his team and let's bleep and go, boys. He doesn't care Sportsnet's in there. He doesn't care and shouldn't care. It's a grown clubhouse. I am so tired of people complaining about the cussing on these moments. Like after a Stanley Cup, oh man, they're all swearing on TV. Yeah, because everybody wants access. They want to be there. They want to see the raw emotion of these players.
Yeah.
That is it, period. End of sentence. John Schneider, the Toronto Blue Jays, don't have to apologize to anybody. Now, Sportsnet might have to apologize to, you know, the people who run the television licenses and things like that and have to think twice of, okay, should we put it on a delay when we go into the room for that?
Yeah.
Watch the Rough Riders videos. They have to bleep out Corey Mace after a win because he's talking to adults. He is talking to adults. His adults that he coaches. And John Schneider was talking to adults last night after that game. So save me the, please think of the children, for the Toronto Blue Jays celebrations last night.
I will disagree with you. I think that people that swear,
stop it,
are just awful people.
Stop it.
And
do we need to live mic the Green Zone Lounge locker?
You can find a more appropriate way of expressing yourself. And I'm not only am I disappointed in John, I'm disappointed in you
for endorsing.
Think of the kids, Jamie.
Think of the kids.
What's wrong with you?
I think my kids might have at some point in their combined ages of 20 years on this planet probably heard somebody cuss at least once in our household.
You gotta start them young,
but
get them used to it.
We're asking you the MVP. My MVP is John Schneider. I thought the bullpen game, what he was able to manage, work the lineup, a little bit of questionable on some of the things going in game three, fix that right away. Of course, other nominees, Ernie Clement getting some love.
Yes, yeah.
Varsho getting some love.
I'm saving mine. I need to think more about this. But Schneider's come in a couple of... We got Greg, who always takes a chance at taking a shot at Schneider. But we've got Vladdy came in. So Vladdy's is
9 hits, 9 RBIs
in
the first 4 games.
Yeah, definitely.
1-877-332.
I'm going to go off the board, though, a bit.
8255. Off the board. Don't say Jeff Hoffman or I will come over the table.
Free,
Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. We are getting a lot of texts and different names being thrown out there on who should be the Blue Jays MVP of the divisional series. Nathan Lucas, George Springer, John Schneider, of course, Vladdy, Ernie Clement. What about Treya Savage, Kevin Gausman? I think we're almost have crossed off a check mark on every player. Varsho. Votes? So keep those texts coming. 1-877-332.
Varsho had a good showing last night.
8255. But we continue our tour of NHL teams in Canadian markets as the NHL season begins. And our final two are stops in Montreal and Ottawa. Sean Farrell is joining us with the Montreal Canadiens on NHL.com. Not Sean Farrell, the young player who formerly played for the Montreal Canadiens. What was it like covering Sean Farrell, Sean Farrell?
It was pretty funny. I'm the OG, the old guy.
As we get to the last night's game, what stands out right away? I know it's only game number one, but what was there a player that didn't play well or a player that stood out to you on night one against the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I don't know if it stood out, but he was certainly noticeable, and that's Patrick Laine, who was playing on the fourth line. And did you ever imagine you'd see a first power play unit that had Patrick Laine available and he isn't on it?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be an interesting player for the Canadiens this year, because depending on what you get from him, that could push the team in one direction or the other.
Sean, can you give us an update on the Hudson? Because obviously there's a conversation happening there between him and the team, and I'm guessing that this is a question that you have to present more often than you probably want to at this point.
Yeah, I would have to think that both parties are really disappointed that they weren't able to come to terms before the season. But it's a changing financial landscape, and this is just going to be a wait and see. But it's unfortunate because the Canadiens have had a lot of success in signing their young players, their developing players to long-term contracts or to...
When you look at like Lane Hudson and this, like this is they are doing the documentary, the rebuild for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah,
that blue line. Fast forward 4 years from now, with Dobson, who won't even he'll be the oldest guy at. Well, it depends on where Mike Matheson goes, but you're looking at this group and this core group being 4 years older, and all of them will be under the age of 30. This is where they're at now. How good will this blue line be moving forward through this rebuild as they're closing in on no longer calling it a rebuild?
Yeah, I think that's the one thing to focus in on is the defense. You have David Savard retiring at the end of last season. A lot of symbolism with that, because that really is a passing of the torch in terms of who's running the defense. I mean, Matheson is now the elder statesman. And again, you talk about the power play. He wasn't on either of the first two units last night. It's going to be a remarkable defense, and that's going to be the backbone of this team as it moves forward.
Sean, do the Montreal Canadiens need to make some room in the trophy room for another Calder this year?
That could very well be. We shall see. That always plays out on the ice. But what we've seen on the ice from Ivan Demidov so far is some pretty spectacular skills. And he stayed in Montreal this summer and worked out and put together highlight reels worth of viewing for perhaps fans out there. So they're looking forward to seeing the real deal.
Sean, what have you seen from the growth of Martin St-Louis as a coach? Because when he got hired, it was ridiculed from coast to coast to coast on going, what, he played in the NHL, but the biggest job he had was like a peewee coach for his kids. What have you seen from Martin St-Louis taking on NHL job with NHL media obligations and NHL egos. What have you seen growth curve-wise for him?
Well, what I see from him is the more we get into this, the more he is the perfect fit as the coach of this version of the Montreal Canadiens. I remember asking him at the original press conference when he was introduced how people didn't know. You know, I asked him, how long have you been thinking about this? And he's been thinking about this forever. He's one of those players that basically coached as he played. And as far as a fit, you talk about a guy, he might not have the coaching bona fides that everybody would expect, but can you think of a guy who's better placed to understand any level of hockey player, from the elite right down to the guy who had the door shut on him so many times and had to prove himself? That's Marty. That's who he was on the ice.
Sean, I'm very curious about the competitive side of this game with respect to the Olympics, right? And and how that's going to impact teams and players that might be outside looking in. And Montreal is very, very interesting in regards to that storyline with Suzuki and Caulfield. You got, obviously, Suzuki on the Canadian side, Caulfield on the American side, left off the Four Nations rosters.
Right.
And you can't help but think if they can stay healthy, that there is a chance that they're going to be considered. How much, this is a tough question to answer, but do you think that's at the back of their minds as we get into this season here for those guys?
Yeah, you know, everybody answers that question, you know, is it in the back of your mind, or, you know, and they have a hard time admitting that because they aren't really thinking of that, you know. They're thinking of the game they're playing for their teams. But it's a long-term thing. They know every game they're playing. I'm sure Montembeau felt it all last season up until he was named the third goalie on Team Canada. It has to be a source of an incredible source of motivation.
Sean Farrell joining us of NHL.com, covering the Montreal Canadiens as the season is underway. What is the next jump here for the Canadiens? Like, instead of going like, of course, is this a playoff team, all that stuff, but what is truly, what should be the expectation and a fair expectation from Habs fans for what this team can accomplish this season?
This season, they could be back in the playoffs. They could win a playoff round. Those are possibilities. You think back to last year, they were talking about being in the playoff mix. Idea that they would actually compete for a playoff spot. And they were successful in that regard, to the delight of all. And, of course, that raises expectations. So I gave you the high side of that. The low side, well, they fall short of the playoffs. That alone, you know, in this market is just going to drive everybody nuts to take a step back. I'm quite bullish on the lineup that they are icing right now. I love the additions of Bolduc and Dobson, and really eager to see what this team is going to be able to do going forward. But on the whole, I would be betting on them not only contending to be back in the playoffs, but making it there.
I'm curious. I did watch a bit of the Habs and Leafs game last night, Sean, but I wasn't paying enough attention to sort of get a breakdown on how they're handling the power play units. I'm wondering what they're doing with Lane and Dobson. Are they quarterbacking 1-2, or are they on at the same time? Most teams have sort of shied away from playing 2D in the power play units.
They are on at the same time.
Are they? Wow.
The challenge for them was they were on the second unit. And, for example, there was one power play in the second period when the Canadiens' first unit was out the entire 2 minutes. It just played out that way. I think there was a clearing or two, and there was no change. They had a lot of pressure. There's a lot of potential on that first power play unit. You've got the top line. You've got Hudson, and they were moving the puck around really nicely and getting some really good looks.
Nick Suzuki, as this, you know, his season progresses, well, it's going to be interesting with the Caulfield as well, with the Olympic dream ahead.
Yeah.
How much are those two on the American side and the Canadian side? Do you see them both making that jump to an Olympic roster?
Yeah, I could absolutely see both of them accomplishing that. I was really surprised that Caulfield was left off the American roster last season. Not surprised that Suzuki wasn't on Team Canada at the Four Nations, but he's definitely competing for a spot for the Canadian Olympic team. And Caulfield, I'd be even more surprised, depending on what kind of season he has, because obviously that's going to have a lot to say in whether he goes or not. But if he produces as he has been, I'd really be surprised if the Americans took a pass on him again.
Question, one of the harder markets, and I think this isn't a disparaging comment, but one of the harder markets in this country and in the NHL to be a captain in is Montreal. He's been doing it for more than a couple of years now, Sean Suzuki. I'm curious about your take on where he's at and how he's developed. And I did hear through the grapevine that he's trying to learn French. How's that coming along?
It's coming along well enough that he did a sit-down interview in French.
No way.
With TVA Sports. And though it might have been a little stilted, a little rehearsed, he spoke in French. And there's no better way of connecting with the fan base in this market than to do that. That one act alone. Show any interest and any effort in learning French, and it will be met a thousandfold.
Sean Farrell joining us, NHL.com writer. Previously... did write way back in the day, Sean, as there's a new documentary coming out. Well, it was actually premiered at the new cinema festival. Who Killed the Montreal Expos coming out October the 21st.
Yeah.
You covered kind of the final year and final years. So answer the question, who killed the Montreal Expos, and will someone revive the Montreal Expos?
Wow, I'll go right to the revive, and that's a really big hill to climb because of the financial aspects of the game. Now, that kind of money is going to be hard to come up with here in Montreal. So until proven otherwise, I really don't see it in the foreseeable future. The one good thing I'll say about that is historically baseball has always gone back to a city it has left.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best I can say about that. Who killed it? Well, the strike in 94 sure didn't help. But, you know, Sam, when Charles Bronson owned the team, money was never a problem. From the moment he sold the team, money became front and center. Montreal became was easily discussed as a small market team, and Montrealers never see themselves as a small market at anything. Just way too many factors to go in. A perfect storm of losing a team. A team that I followed for 36 years from the time I was 5 years old.
Well, so I imagine you're a bit interested in this Netflix documentary, unless you saw the premiere.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's all tough viewing. You know, it's tough to revisit because unlike the Blue Jays, the Expos never won a championship, so we don't even have that to hang our hat on. It's only the Hall of Famers that we saw come through town, and we saw so many. And Vladdy, to see Vladdy Jr. doing what he's doing in Toronto, I was there in Montreal when the three-year-old Vladdy was out on the field with Dad. Incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's amazing to watch as he...
I loved Ortiz last night with Guerrero after the game. I'm sorry, I'm showing my baseball allegiance there, but... That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yes, it was.
Dale, Yankee lose.
Oh, yeah.
When you heard the other end of that one too many times, it's kind of fun.
Sean, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy a new season. That is Sean Farrell from NHL.com covering the Montreal Canadiens. As we have a Yankees win moment, though, in this day in sports history. It's a very, very, very infamous playoff home run that was on this day. We'll remember it next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Carrasco going back to the track, to the wall. And what happens here? He contends that a fan reaches up and touches it. But Richie Garcia says no, it's a home run.
Derek Jeter. It's a home run, but 12-year-old Jerry Mayer reaches over, grabs the ball. They rule a home run. Video showed that that ball wouldn't have cleared the fence if young Jeffrey Mayer hadn't reached over. He was 12 years old. Game one of the 1996 American League Championship Series. The Yankees would win that one. They'd actually go on to win the World Series later in the playoffs. Jeffrey Mayer. I looked it up. Where is he now? Remember last year, the fan trying to rip the...
Yeah.
They found Jeffrey Mayer. He's 41 years old. He's got three kids. He works artificial intelligence security, like on the...
What the heck is that?
Like IT side of...
Oh,
that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In New York.
Yeah.
And he was talking about what it was like at 12 years... He was a New York celebrity. He was on late night shows because how many years ago was that? 29 years ago, the 12-year-old reached over the fence and grabbed the ball to help the Yankees win game one of the American League Championship Series.
Tracks.
Yeah. 41, three kids, Jeffrey Mayer.
And everybody.